Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Sorry to let you down. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. A couple of very special guests on the show from Viz Anime, you know, Viz Media's animation department. Returning champion, senior manager of animation marketing, Charlene Ingram is here. Charlene, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me again. It's always great being on AnCast.
And first timer, never had her on before, but she is the director of animation production at Viz Anime. It's Julie McDonald. Julie, pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks, Zach.
Okay, we'll see how you feel about that once I'm done with these questions. So we got to talk about Sailor Moon, which was has been a huge release. It's the reason you're on here to talk to us today. It came out on Tuesday on Blu-ray, and you guys have been promoting this. I'm sure, Charlene, it feels like 10 years of your life has been dumped into promoting this thing. And the show came out, and there's a lot of questions surrounding this release, specifically the video quality of the Blu-ray. And I had a lot of questions about it, and Julie, I'm glad you're here to take some of these. And the first question I had is if you could walk us through the approval process for the video as we see it. So when did you first see what these Blu-rays were really going to look like outside of test footage?
Okay, so let me just kind of reframe that for a little bit, because when you say the word approval process, I'll take you through the steps that we went through to create the Blu-ray, and that might get to the heart of what you're asking. So essentially, we've been looking at this footage for quite a long time. It came to us months and months ago as source masters from our licensor, and we took a look at it, and we got together and thought to ourselves, what's the best product that we can make for customers who haven't seen this material in a long time? So we certainly looked at the footage when it first came in to us as ingested ProRes from our licensor. And we took a look and thought, well, we can definitely clean it up a little bit. We want to inverse telecine it. We want to return it to its native progressive frame rate. And then we thought a lot about turning it into a beautiful Blu-ray. So we worked closely with one of our post houses to try to up-res it. And some of those issues that have been out in the universe and the Twitterverse with regards to blended frames and aliasing and artifacts, we've seen those from the beginning. They were present on the source material. So we took great care to work with the footage in such a way that would preserve its inherent quality, but also try to improve it and up-res it. So when we talk about approvals, you know, we, Viz, and our post-production house have been looking at the material for a very long time. We finally, after many iterations of working with some of the aliasing and the conversion, we added in some color correction in order to kind of boost the gain on the red space. And then we were happy with it, and we were ready to encode for Blu-ray. So essentially, you know, anybody who's familiar with the DVD encoding process, you're going to have very many points of checks and balances where you've got outside QC houses taking a look at it, you've got internal people looking at the footage, and we were very happy with it. We fixed what we were able to fix. And other things that are coming out now in terms of people being unhappy with certain aspects of the footage, those are things that we've really worked our magic to the degree that we can. And so I'm not sure what you mean by approvals, but basically, internally, Viz has been working with it, and Toy, the licensor, has been looking at it for quite some time.
Okay, when I ask about approvals, the reason specifically is because, you know, myself and every video expert I've talked to, including people who do Blu-ray authoring for a living, you mentioned one of your authoring houses specifically credited at Subatomic Digital.
Yes.
Okay, so the magic that you're talking about is responsible for the video errors that we're seeing in the Blu-ray video. It can't be on the masters, the Digibeta masters that you're working from, because those problems are specifically a product of noise reduction and post-processing. That's where those problems crop up. That's how they happen. The masters that you're using, you said in your Neon Alley blog, were the same masters that were given to that were used in Japan for their 2009 DVD release. That's a remaster from 2004. Those DVDs, and the screenshots that you have actually, I hate to say this, but they really cannot be from the Japanese DVDs, because a lot of people have those DVDs and have been taking screenshots and showing us, here's what those DVDs look like. They don't look like that in motion. They don't look like that when paused. So those screenshots must be from the masters. So, the masters can't really have the problems that we're seeing. You see what I'm saying? Like, those are post-production.
No, I totally get it, Zach. And I think so. I think we should be careful, a little bit mindful of what we're talking about when we talk about what we're referencing. So first of all, you know, you and I, right now I can't see you. I can see your super cool graphic here on Skype. And I think we get into a little bit of this back and forth with what was the source, what was the master, what can I point to? And I just want to really reiterate that anything that we have put up on the internet as representing what we see, what we have as the source, is absolutely 100% accurate to what we have. So I want to, and I also want to say that I want to say, yes, you're right. You would look at that and say, well, those artifacts can't be part of what would come from such a beautiful master. So without getting too deep into it, I can assure you that what you're seeing in terms of specifically the blended frames is not something that was introduced in part of our post-production process. And, okay, you know, we're as passionate about as anyone, probably more so. I mean, we're like video passion on steroids here. I can't even tell you how addicted we are to getting the best possible imagery. So, you know, I don't think there's a lot of ground we can cover by pointing to this or that image and saying, this is the right image, that's the right image. I can tell you without a doubt that myself and 10 video files who sit with me every single day, 20 hours a day working on this material, know and are providing Charlene and our Neon Alley folks with the images that we had access to.
Okay.
So I hear what you're saying about the post-production process wouldn't introduce that. And in this case, it didn't, because we posted with the material that we had to work with. I hope that answers your question.
Well, I'm saying the post-production process is responsible for the errors that we're seeing in the Blu-ray video as we see it. And the reason, one of the other things I really need to point out is that on your Blu-ray, on the third disc, in the extras, there's a clean opening version that was clearly not put through the same post-processing that is from those masters. That video is a dramatic improvement. Video quality doesn't have the smearing or the ghosting or any of those problems that are present. On the same disc, I can click on episode 23.
It's so beautiful. I love that piece as well. Isn't it pretty? So, and it actually comes from a different source. So I think you have to be really careful. I appreciate how you're continually pointing towards errors being introduced by the post process, but I'm just here to assure you that, first of all, they were not introduced in the post process. And when you have different sources, then that's what you're working with. So I think it's, you know, if there's one thing I'd really love to achieve out of our conversation today is re-benchmarking the customer and re-benchmarking the fanverse so that you can understand that we had different sources to work with and that none of those issues that you're seeing were introduced in the post-production process. Now, you know, that's something that it might take a little time to, you know, release a few more images or help educate the customer as to what was actually taking place. And I can understand that there would be some question marks when you've got multiple things out worldwide, but we have to continue to point back to what we had to work with. And that's really what I have to do in this call, is to share with you what we had to work with.
Right, but what you had to work with is the same as all those other studios. What was the source on the clean opening if it wasn't the same as what you were working with for the episodes?
It came from a different master. So those clean openings and endings were not delivered with the original footage that we got in back when we were working on it with Josh. The clean openings and endings were something that were requested later on because fans really like having the clean opening and endings. And me, you know, in marketing, I really wanted to fight to have that. So we were willing to take any source we can get of the cleans of those two songs. They came in a different fashion from the rest of it, from everything I understand and everything that Julie's team has worked on.
And to wit, you're talking about, like, you know, other worldwide releases and everything. Well, you know, we're in a globally connected world, and, you know, we've seen what the Italian release looked like and what another ShowPro-owned company, Kaze, they released this on DVD from these same masters, and those don't have any of these problems. And so that's why I'm sort of insisting a little bit on this to most people who work in video. Look at this and say, this is the result of overly aggressive noise reduction and other things that happen in the authoring process. It's not in the masters. It's in the authoring process. But you're telling me that none of the blurry blotchiness and the ghosting, the really heavy ghosting, none of that happened in the authoring process. That's what you're saying.
That is what I'm saying.
Okay. Okay, so I guess I have to ask then, are you happy with the video quality on the Blu-rays? I mean, as a videophile yourself, do you look at that and say, okay, this is as good as this show can look?
You know, my feeling about it is I'm really happy with what we did to it based on what we had to work with. I'm thrilled with it. You know, I think there'll always be, when you're looking at old material, and I've worked in this business for about 25 years and worked on different projects where you're taking old material and all the way back from 35 millimeter film, I'm familiar with what can be achieved when you have the resources and the time to go in and do a frame by frame 35 millimeter film cleanup. And, you know, so of course, am I frustrated that I didn't have access to that and I couldn't take 26 months to go frame by frame? Of course, slightly frustrated. But when I look at the beautiful color, we match the Pantone colors, we match the colors to the style guide. Am I thrilled it's on Blu-ray at all? Yes, I'm completely thrilled. I love it. These issues don't trouble me in that way because I don't consider them to be in any way making the product in any way less. I know the love and care that we put into it. So am I happy with it? I am happy with it. I'm completely over the moon with it, if you must know.
Okay. Well, I mean, okay. So, okay. let me put it this way. Those screenshots that are in the Neon Alley blog labeled 2009 Japanese DVD release, you're saying those are not from that DVD release. They're from the masters that you used that were used for those DVDs. So will you relabel those shots as these are from our Digibeta masters?
The shots on the blog are labeled 2009 master. If you look up in the top corner of them, they're not directly from the Japanese DVD. They're from the masters that Julie's team had that came in. So they were direct screen grabs from before anything was done to the video to the final product.
Japanese DVD master. Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay. Okay, so with that in mind, it sounds like you're happy with the video quality, so you will continue to work with Subatomic Digital, and the next set we can expect it to look the same?
Well, every season, every portion of video, and not to speak over Julie, is Sailor Moon looks different as it goes along. Each of the seasons are very standalone in that way, and each piece of master is different. So one could not expect at all, even in the most perfect circumstances, that every single piece of video would look the same. It's going to vary throughout. Now, I haven't seen any of our yet besides what's on Hulu. So that can give a little bit of an indication. But each piece of output is going to be a little different. I know Julie can speak to that more.
Yeah, I mean, definitely we are, as we speak, processing episodes and taking a look at them and adjusting as we go. So I'm not really going to speak to, I'm not the expected quality of future sets other than to say they're going to be the absolute highest quality possible.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to say, and I'm comfortable saying that. And I have great faith in Subatomic Digital. I really do. They are a very long time player in this space. They do a lot of work for international companies, BBC. They're very highly regarded, and you know, it hurts me to see any kind of negative blowback towards that firm, because they're a very trusted partner of ours, and we really stand behind the work that they do. You know, are we paying a little bit more attention or a lot more attention to certain aspects given what we're seeing in the internet? Of course, because that's how much we care. So, you know, I think if anything, I think you can just be assured that we're giving it all that more care. So that's pretty much all I would have to say, I think, about that.
Okay. So in other words, even though there is video product out there using these masters that does not have the extreme ghosting and smearing and blurring that is on the Blu-ray disc, so it can be, that kind of video can be produced from these masters, you right now have no intention of doing another take on the authoring process and figuring out a way to release this without those video errors?
We're not going to re-author material that's already been authored, no. That is, there are no plans to do that.
So there will be no replacement program, there will be no fix. If people aren't happy with this, there is no fix coming.
Not for set one, no, there isn't.
Okay.
And not at this time.
No, right. But I mean, having said that, we're here talking with you today. We take these issues very, very seriously. So there's nothing that can underline our care as much as the fact that we're really dealing with these things as they come up, and we're very responsive, and it matters to us. Our perception matters and reality matters. And I think bringing those two together is very important, which is why we're here talking today.
Okay. All right. I understand. So fans who pre-ordered this and they get their copy in the mail and they're not happy with the video quality, what do you suggest they do?
Yeah, of course, you know, we take all feedback very seriously, but that's, I mean, it's up to everyone what they want to do with what they bought. Given, you know, to echo Julie's point, given what we had to work with, that's how it was able to turn out, you know, with everyone working on it. So we just don't have any news on anything about that at this time. Your release was just Tuesday, so we're always constantly evaluating, reevaluating, going into the future.
Okay. So no replacement program. If the fans are unhappy, they can either return their copy or whatever they decide to do with it. And the next set will look similar to this in terms of video quality, because what you're saying is no, there is no other Blu-ray output there's no Blu-ray version of this that could be released without these, frankly, glaring video.
Well, the next set is still in process. It hasn't gone out the door yet. They're still working on
set. Yeah, I want to be careful that we don't say that. I don't think it would be accurate to say the following sets errors are going to continue to appear. First of all, I just think that would be misleading. So I hope that we don't position it in that way. I think that every episode has certain artifacts that may show up. And, you know, I can tell you that we have redoubled our efforts to just take a look at anything coming out the door, certainly on set two. Hold on just a second. We're having a little bit of a technical. I just want to double check that we're still good. Can you still hear us?
Yep.
Okay, great.
Just a screensaver.
Sorry. I just think, you know, it's really the message from Viz Media is that we're paying even closer attention to putting out the highest quality product as we possibly can. And we're doing everything that we can on the back end to ensure that if there are issues or artifacts present, that they're minimized. That's the message.
Okay. But Subatomic Digital will continue to be working on these. The post-production process will be the same. The authoring process will be the same. Like, I'm trying to give people an idea of what to expect. So if they bought season one and they're really not happy with the video quality, like a lot of people aren't, it's not fair to tell them you should expect set two to look dramatically different. That's just not fair. If it's the exact same authoring house, the exact same process, the exact same process.
I mean, it's not all done. There's no way to tell fully for future releases. All 200 episodes are absolutely not complete. You know, R is just beginning the second season, so it's impossible to tell what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, Zach, I mean, I think given the state of the Masters, I think that statement would, I think it would actually be misleading to direct them in such a negative direction. But that's just my personal position. So.
Well,
I can tell you we're not changing partners. No, that's true. We're not changing partners. So that's what your question is.
I'm coming at this from a consumer perspective, as somebody who buys a lot of Blu-rays, a lot of anime Blu-rays, and if I plunk down $70-$90 for this release and I'm not happy with the video quality and I go to the company that released it and said, are you going to do anything about this? And they said, well, we're going to keep an eye on it, but we're going to do the same thing for the next set. That at least tells me, well, now I know what to expect. So if I'm not happy with this, I know what to expect. It's not like next time it's going to be totally different. I'm just trying to be fair to the consumer here for what they're.
Yeah, I totally understand that. So, I mean, our basic position is that we've made the best product possible and that our treatment will vary depending upon the masters that we receive. And that's our commitment. So that's not going to waver or certainly, you know, not it's not going to waver. So that's our commitment, that we're going to continue to make the best product possible. And I really think that's probably where we should leave it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for answering those questions. It's been an interesting couple of weeks, more so maybe for you than for I. But we have some other topics to get to here, and there are other things I wanted to talk about, specifically in regards to this release. This was already mentioned publicly, but the DVD version is pillar boxed, which is something a lot of people obviously have already sort of addressed this. So future releases will not be pillar boxed, correct?
It will not be pillar boxed. That's correct.
And no replacement on this one for that problem.
No, it will not. It will not be replaced. You can consider it a collector's edition, I guess. No.
Okay, so that's just going to be the way that is, but in the future, the pillar boxing issue will not be there. So I guess let's talk a little bit about the promotion and release of this, because we have Charlene here. So it's been a long summer and a long fall for you, I guess, doing promoting this thing so heavily at conventions and stuff over the summer. There was scarcely a convention that didn't have some sort of giant Sailor Moon event at it. And tell us a little bit about what that was like. I mean, obviously you spent the whole summer dealing with Sailor Moon fans, so give us an idea what that was like.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole, as for my role in Sailor Moon, I have a little bit of a cold. Where I come in the process is I am around at the very beginning, at the inception, at the birth of the property, and then I go back into promotions after everything is delivered from production. So the whole journey of Sailor Moon, it was about, my gosh, it's been over a year since we really started working on it, with really ramping up after the beginning of the year. It's been a whirlwind. Like, I haven't had a chance to rest yet. I've been going solid for well over a year. But for the, you know, for the convention, starting with Anime Central back around the time when we talked last, it's just, the response has just been phenomenal. So much support out at the conventions. All the events did great. The only downside is we kept running out of a lot of stuff. Everyone would joke that I would be, you know, Char, who's a really big Sailor Moon fan, would be the first person to oversell stuff and overestimate the need. But we ran out of everything. So I kind of got caught with not making enough Sailor Moon coins, be it for AX, Otakon, or Right Stuff, or not making enough posters, because I thought like I'd make this like egregious number of posters. I think the conventions team was a little angry with me for how many pallets of Sailor Moon boxes went out to the shows. But just to see it run out was really great. For me, it's very nice to see people, you know, now looking back on release week, it's so nice to see people who had been out of the anime space, like they hadn't been anime fans for about 10 years, finally come back into anime through Sailor Moon, and that they're looking at other things. That really, that really makes me happy, as much as sometimes we answer questions on the marketing end that are really things that have been commonplace for 10 years. Like, there's still a perception that things will come out in 4-episode volumes. So just, you know, refuting that and telling people they can get full box sets and that the cast is, you know, it's completely uncut and unedited. So it's just been, I mean, it still kind of feels like a dream. I mean, it's something that, I know I sound a little exhausted because I am. It's been quite a big journey, but I'm so happy it's finally out. I'm so happy that the cast is being so well received. And I could talk more about the cast and all that process later, what it's like working with them. But the events have been great, and conventions, they want to continue the Sailor Moon Day going forward. So I'm already working on stuff for next summer, when we'll be starting to promote the third season next summer. So working on that stuff for the Outer Guardians, which are some of my favorites, is super exciting. So it's like you drive so much to the release day and all the marketing and all the promotion, and as soon as the release day comes, there's the next set. So there isn't really a time to take a break. I mean, I might be able to take one day off, but it'll be one of those days off that you're still checking email all the time.
Right. Yeah. I have those every day.
You know what it's like.
Yeah. It was kind of a whirlwind of activity. I believe you're credited with giving Anime Expo like a, I don't know, 15,000 person attendance bump this year. Obviously, there were a lot of factors involved in that, but yeah, there's a big increase.
It was funny with Anime Expo in that the initial conversations about doing Sailor Moon Day at Anime Expo, one of the initial conversations was, are you sure you need that big of a room? To have that room fill up, and it's sad that so many people had to be turned away just because Anime Expo just did not have a space big enough for all the fans who wanted to see the official panel. So just trying to do bigger and better next year. I mean, now we're going to have 10 Sailor Guardians to talk about rather than just the original Inner Guardians. So it's going to be, you know, double the excitement. And I always try to, you know, as a marketer, and you know, anybody who knows me, Ashar, I always like to just do bigger and bigger and more glittery and just even better. So last year's going to be kind of a hard act to follow, but I think I'm going to do my best and try to make it even more magical for people who come out to the summer shows.
Well, for a lot of people, those later seasons are kind of where it's at. A lot of people really like, you know, Sailor Moon R and Sailor Moon S way more than the first season. So, you know, I know a lot of people became anime fans just watching those and, you know, divorcing it from like the old Deke dub. Like, that's really where their anime fandom came from, is because in those episodes is kind of where the show shows its hand in terms of, oh, it's inclusive about gender identity and all these other things. You know, that those were the seasons that a lot of people became fans. So, you know, I could see people being excited for, even though it's like you announced the show. So that excitement is sort of fading a little bit, but you know, people are huge fans of those later seasons that, kind of made the show for a lot of folks.
Yeah. There's a lot of things still coming for announcements. I mean, right now we, you know, just have the Inner Guardians, but they're working on casting Chibiusa and Sailor Pluto for Sailor Moon R, and you know, all those great characters. And then, of course, they'll go in to start working on the casting for Uranus, Neptune, Saturn, and then all those great villains. I mean, there's always new characters, new very important characters every season. And to speak to your point, yeah, you're right. That third season of Sailor Moon S, watching that way back in the day when I first started going to anime cons, that was the first thing that I really started loving the Japanese voices, because it was very hard for me at first to get into the Japanese voices. I had been listening to the Deke dub, and it was kind of like Uranus and Neptune really brought a whole new world to me, and it just showed that this wasn't just a cartoon. It was much deeper than even before when I had watched the uncut end of the first season. It was really that third season with, you know, dealing with the silence coming, and that an anime supposedly for really little girls could get that dark. I was in college at the time, and it opened my eyes to so much. And it was really that thing that solidified me as a lifetime anime fan. And it really put that passion right in place. So And I can't wait for the third season. I can't wait to find out who Haruka and Michiru are going to be. I can't wait to find out who Chibiusa is. I can't wait to find out who Setsuna is and Hotaru. So I can't wait till all the Sailor Senshi are together.
All right. And, you know, to bring it back to this again, have you taken a look? Have you even received the materials for those seasons yet? And have you taken a look at them? I mean...
For me, the only episodes I've been able to see, and this is this kind of harkens back to when we talked last time, when we made the announcement trailer. So I storyboarded the whole trailer, and those key episodes were processed first. It was done from a set of, I think it was 10 episodes. So those are the only pieces of the later seasons I've seen yet. I get stuff from production as it's completed. So sometimes I sneak at the office and I look at the initial QuickTime mixes. Like, I'll put them in my other monitor and kind of listen to them while I work. But I usually don't get to experience the final product until it goes up on Hulu or it comes out. And I watch the Moon Day episodes every Monday because that's my personal geekiness. And I watch Crystal twice a month, but as far as seeing everything through the process, marketing just doesn't have that visibility into that. We're really at the inception and then the promotion. So I have to trust in Julie's awesome team, you know, and all the production team to do the very best they can. And I just come and I be the cheerleader and I geek out over it with everyone else.
Right. Yeah. No, I think most people, if they're not, I hope they're aware that you are not directly responsible for any of the video production choices or any of that stuff. That's not your field. And I hope people are aware of that.
But if someone thinks one of the trailers crappy, that's my fault because I approve all those. I mean, I marketing, right?
Right.
Or if a clip is bad, yeah, that'd be my bad. We just loaded yesterday and today the first Jupiter and Venus clips. So.
Okay.
Which it's fun exploring those early Jupiter and Venus episodes again and just remembering how dingy / strong Minako can be.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's exciting. But yeah, that's sort of important. If you're unhappy with the way that the Sailor Moon Blu-ray looks, Charlene is not the person to scream at.
I really admire everyone that can work on video and audio. I mean, I'm a little bit more, because I spent so much time as a musician, I'm a little bit more in tune with audio. That tends to be that thing that it really resonates with me. But I really admire everybody that can work with video, especially animation. And some of my closest friends are animators, and I admire and respect the craft. But in this great life game of D&D, I rolled like 2 in drawing and art.
Yeah.
So I'm really more in tune with sounds, and of course, marketing is kind of my passion.
Right, obviously. Okay, so moving on a little bit from Sailor Moon, because you guys do things other than Sailor Moon, believe it or not. Let's talk a little bit about some of your other releases. So this weekend, I think Inuyasha Final Act is going on Toonami after how many years of being out? Like, it's a little late, but it is finally going to be on TV, I guess.
Yeah, and that's, you know, any network, and it's important to let everyone know that any television network, they make their programming choices and they approach the studios of what they want to put on TV. So Inuyasha has been off the air for just a little bit over a year. And I know a lot of fans, they really want to see Inuyasha Final Act. And we're just really thrilled that Toonami wants to add it to their lineup and finally get that end to the Inuyasha story. So it's going to be really neat on Saturday watching it, because as for me, not to loop it back to Sailor Moon again, but it does tie in. Me, you know, Viz Media's animation marketing team is 2 people. It's just me and Amy. So on Saturdays, you know, the first and third Saturdays, we live tweet Sailor Moon Crystal. And this weekend, we're going to be live tweeting for Inuyasha Final Act, taking a break, getting some coffee, and just be right back on for Crystal. So it's kind of neat that it's coming on at 2 a.m. So we can do Inuyasha, take a break, do Crystal, and then sleep. So it's actually really good timing that they chose that spot for completely selfish reasons.
Yeah, maybe time to hire some interns to stay up until 3:30 in the morning on a weekend.
you gotta put that love into it. You gotta, you know, you just... You have to have the authenticity, you have to have that passion, and I mean, I get to sleep till noon on those Saturdays, so it's kind of awesome. I get to bed at 4 in the morning, and I get to sleep in, so it kind of feels like I'm a teenager again. So I don't mind it.
But the love could flow from you into an intern. Wait, now we're getting it. That sounds bad. Okay.
That sounds like a bad Sailor Moon villain. Like, love energy going into interns, and then, like, sending an army of minions, like, go collect the love energy and bring it back.
Right. So, on the subject of Inuyasha, though, I'm curious what kind of fan feedback you still get about that show, because it was kind of seminal years ago. It ran on Toonami for a very long time, or on Adult Swim for a very long time. And created, I think, its fair share of anime fans as well. It's too soon for people to be nostalgic for Inuyasha, but do you see in 20 years the reception of that show? In 20 years, could you imagine putting out like a 20th anniversary nostalgia release a la Sailor Moon for Inuyasha? Do you think it's that kind of show?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, all the Rumiko Takahashi shows are very, very classic, and it's... You know, as of right now, you know, the plans for Inuyasha going forward are still just in the very beginning of the ideation, because we've been starting to experiment with some re-releases, like with Death Note coming up very soon, just repackaging everything. We learned a lot from Ranma ½ as well. But the cool thing with Inuyasha is, I do these quarterly surveys, talking to fans a whole bunch and gathering this data. And in a previous one, I always throw a couple would-you-rathers in there. That's what I call them. And it's interesting on Inuyasha and Ranma, where my generation, getting into anime nearly 20 years ago, everybody experienced Ranma first. Ranma was the number one. Everything stemmed from Ranma. Now, encountering the fans and encountering the consumers, is Ranma is new to the Inuyasha kids. So they know Inuyasha first. So to them, Ranma is a reduction of Inuyasha, not the other way around. So it's very, very, very fascinating selling Ranma, so to speak, telling people about Ranma, but phrasing it through Inuyasha, because that's one of the shows that brought people into fandom. So it's really neat that all of Rumiko Sensei series can work both ways like that. But that just boggled my mind when we were working on Ranma, and to even imagine that people knew about Inuyasha first. Like, that made me feel so old.
Right. Yeah, because that show, I was working as a writer in this industry when that show was first coming out. Like, I remember getting digital fan subs of it in like 2001 or whenever the hell it originally came out. Like, that show is old to me, but it's still within my lifetime as an adult, so it's not like, formative or anything. So hearing kids say like, oh, that show, it's old, it's like,
Well, I kind of consider the, purely from a psychological standpoint, I think people are still getting formed well into their 20s.
Right.
And then maybe this is the wisdom of me being in my 30s now.
Sure.
I didn't feel like I became the person that I am until I got into my 30s. But, in my 20s, I thought I had it all figured out. And in my teens, I thought I had definitely had it all figured out and locked and loaded. But
oh, yeah. No, I've been saying that for a very long time. These days, adolescence lasts until you're 28.
Yeah.
So until you got to really start worrying about paying your taxes and everything. Okay, it looks like also Bleach is concluding.
So Bleach, a couple of weeks ago, that was, I'll admit, this is very schmaltzy, the final episode of Bleach, I cried because when Bleach first came out, and this is my, this is actually an election-themed story. Way back in 2004, I was really sad about the results of the presidential election. So one of my friends cheered me up by bringing me the first three volumes of the Bleach manga, purely because the girl in volume three looks like me. She was like, here, cheer up. This girl in this manga looks like you. You should read it. And it was Orihime. And I read it, and I just became completely addicted. And then the anime came out on Adult Swim, and I fell in love with it. I fell in love with, Johnny as Ichigo, and... and Rukia, and it was just, I was so absorbed into it as a fan. And I remember I used to cosplay Orihime before she even got her powers. Like, back when she was just in a school uniform and had cool barrettes, just to see those characters evolve over time, see those actors evolve, going from a place, like when Bleach started, I was purely just a fan. And I never thought I'd ever be able to be a part of the industry, no matter how hard I worked. I thought I'd always just be a fan. So Bleach is like that capsule in time when I first started dreaming of possibly being able to do something in anime. And then when I came and joined Viz and got to work on Bleach, it was so cool. I think I even, when I announced on my personal Facebook that I came to Viz, the phrase I used, I just posted Bankai, because I felt like I finally got my Bankai. And then seeing Bleach end on Toonami on Cartoon Network, just seeing that story and like putting that button on it, that's why I cried, because as much as Bleach grew over the years, I mean, this is very cheesy, like I felt a little bit of that in my career as well. And the cool thing about my role, you know, in the anime part of Viz, is just because it's wrapped up on TV, there's still quite a few home video releases left. So there's still some things that can be affected on them and do some cool stuff for Bleach. But that was quite a nostalgia trip. And yeah, just seeing it last for so long, I can't even believe there's going to be a Saturday night without Bleach on Cartoon Network.
Yeah, well, it's been a really long time.
Yeah, a long, long time. Anyway, Bleach started. I was still living in Vegas. That's how long ago.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so that's you guys got a lot of things ending lately. You know, Naruto's done. Bleach is ending on TV, at least.
Well, it's just the manga. You know, the manga wrapped up its weekly serialization and weekly Shonen Jump this Monday. And we have a cool, I'm sure someone on the Viz account posted it, but we have this huge whiteboard in the Viz office, and right now it's completely covered in Naruto characters and messages to Kishimoto Sensei. But just because the manga wrapped up its, you know, serialization, the manga volumes are still coming out. They still have, you know, quite a long life in them, and the anime is still ongoing. So the, you know, the anime doesn't have any inklings of stopping. So I, you know, Naruto is far from over, and there's new fans of Naruto coming all the time. Things don't end and just go away. There's always new life into it. I mean, you can even look at Dragon Ball. There's always new fans of Dragon Ball, and that's been over for quite a while.
Yeah, so potentially evergreen. We'll see.
Yeah, there's always, you know, hey, there's always kids that want to put on an orange hoodie and dream they're a ninja.
Sure, right. Yeah, so that's a lot of, you know, you had the big three, Naruto, Bleach, and One Piece. Two of those are effectively over. Naruto, the anime, will go on for a little bit longer. But after those two, you'll have left is One Piece. If you could, you know, sort of, I don't know, speculate a little bit or hypothesize, what do you think potentially might take Naruto's place as the next big thing?
And on the manga end, I don't really know, because there's a lot of really cool up-and-coming stuff coming up through Jump. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of new stuff they're experimenting with. I really like it. It's coming out. I've been able to see some of the initial pages from the publishing team. I really like Assassination Classroom. It's really fun. That's coming out in manga form. I like that it's kind of a dark comedy, but that's the type of stuff I really enjoy. Mm-hmm. I just love the format of the magazine. But as far as like the next big Naruto, Bleach, One Piece, that hasn't materialized yet. Like, you start to see those rumblings in Japan, and then they, you know, slowly come over here. But, you know, Naruto just wrapped up this week, so I don't know what the Jump team has in store. I just trust them, and I know they're gonna come up with some really, really cool stuff. And it'll probably be different, completely different from Naruto or Bleach or One Piece. Because to fit into that slot, you can't just retell the same story. You have to bring something new to the table. So I'm excited to see what the next big fad is. Like the next big, you know, everyone gather at the convention dressed as, you know, Naruto characters, or everyone wear black and white and be Bleach characters, or, you know, have all the Luffy pirates there. So it's, I'm curious. And I hope I'm able to spot the trend correctly. But I just haven't seen it yet.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's sort of the big question. You know, those series put a lot of food on a lot of folks' table for a very long time. And it would be a shame not to see some other big hit come along and take its place and keep the economy going.
Oh, there will be. There's always something. I mean, remember Attack on Titan came out of nowhere. I mean, these things, they come quickly, and they, you know, they get really popular. You just can't always see them coming. You just have to be ready for those opportunities when they come up.
For sure, but Attack on Titan was the first big hit since Death Note, which was your property, and there hasn't been one. You know, Attack on Titan's still fresh, but it's an interesting time when those big titans of the industry sort of, you know, fade. What's going to take its place? It's an interesting time. Okay, so before we get to Twitter questions, I did want to ask, you guys are doing this big survey right now, and I was curious if you could share any results from those surveys. I know it's early, but if any information has come in about your demographic, about purchasing habits, anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I am really impressed this time for several reasons. So I did, I pulled a report this morning, and it's still early in the process, but I can say that we've had more than enough responses so far to have statistical validity in several categories. So this data I'm going to tell you is really rock solid. We, of course, we're trying to gather more. If you haven't done the survey yet, definitely do it. Your opinion counts, and all of those write-in answers for the anime stuff, I read them personally. So it just takes me a while to do it. But there's some really cool data that's coming up in this, and I think it will make a lot of fans very happy. The biggest thing that I'm so thrilled to share is in the past, doing the surveys, the demographic had skewed very male of the respondents. And over the last year and a half since I've been at Viz doing these surveys, the gender representation has gotten more and more equal. And we are almost, we're like within a tenth of a percent equal gender representation, which is fantastic. And that's really, really, really something big, because there's this perception that the typical anime fan is a male 18 to 24. That is not the case. It's, you know, a male, female. And the other thing that's very interesting is the age representation is also very broad as well. So we have a lot of representation of, you know, teenagers, you know, into the 20s, and a big chunk of people, you know, into their 30s and beyond. So it's showing that there's lifetime anime fans being formed. So that's a sign of a very healthy business, that you have equal gender representation, your demographics are nice and broad. That means that a more variety of things can come out. It means more stuff can be viable. And that's good. And that's things that we can take to places that take in home video products. They take in our products, and they might. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of perceptions in the media space. Things like girl shows don't sell, girls don't buy media, you know, people over 24 don't consume media, or people under 18 don't consume media. It's absolutely false in the anime space. It's very, very equal, which is, I cannot even say how happy that makes me. So thank you, everyone who answered to those points. Other cool bits of data. We have really good data on extras and packaging, which, since a lot of that's in the marketing domain, I take that extremely seriously. People love the packaging style of Sailor Moon and Ranma. So those are the ones that people are really enjoying. And as for the, you know, the extras, we'll keep, it's a little bit all over the map, but everything that's popular, we will try to add. We did, you know, based on previous surveys and feedback, we added outtakes to Bloodlad, which were extremely well received, and the actors have a lot of fun doing that. So we will continue where we can to add them. It's not always possible with the licensors and the different titles, but if people like them, we will continue putting them on. And yeah, it's just a lot of really fascinating data. Still Blu-ray DVD combo pack is king. It's people either really, really love the combo pack or they have no opinion. There's very, very little negative. I mean, there's some, of course, but it's vastly in favor of the combo pack and vastly in favor of the nicer box sets. I guess the final point is, for anyone who's scared about their anime moving to exclusively digital, physical product is number one with a bullet with this audience. People want to, they love a show, they want to buy it, they want to put it on their shelves, they want it to be like a trophy in their case. They love streaming as well, but the stuff that they love, they want to buy and keep. So that is pretty counter to some other portions of the home video industry, that a lot of stuff is moving to digital.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In the anime space, it's becoming very collectible, very much an avatar of their fandom that they want to own it and have it on shelf. So it shows, I mean, it shows a lot of health in the anime industry. So I'm super pleased with it. It's great.
All right, cool. Did you happen to get any, I mean, aside from like the obvious answers, any sort of like, or can you give us a picture of some of your best sellers, aside from the super obvious stuff? Like, we know Sailor Moon did very well in pre-orders, and we know Naruto sells really well in Bleach and stuff like that. Can you give us a picture of any of the, some of your top sellers that maybe people wouldn't automatically assume are doing really well?
Yeah, I mean, of course, all those are doing very well. Sailor Moon continues to do very well. It's selling out in several locations. The limited edition is, which won't be reprinted again. When those are gone, they're done. Other surprises, I wouldn't say they're surprises because we try to be very strategic and picking the best of the best titles that we can get. The resurgence of Ranma has done very, very, very well. The Blu-rays on Ranma are performing extremely strongly, which is great for a series of that vintage. So Ranma's doing great, and you know, Bloodlad continues to do extremely well. Like, it's that show that not a lot of people necessarily know about, but it sells really well. We get lots of positive feedback on it, and I think it's just because, you know, it's like a popcorn flick. It's 10 episodes. It's a contained story. It's really funny. It's got action. It's got just the right amount of anime tropes without being inaccessible, and it comes with a, you know, it comes with several, you know, a couple chapters of manga. It comes with all that art and those outtakes and everything. So it's, you know, Bloodline continues to do well. Gargantia is doing well. There's nothing that's, there's no bombs, so to speak. There's nothing that's just not doing well. But there's been a lot of nice surprises. Like, I really, especially Bloodlad is just a really cool bonus.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get into the Twitter questions now. Some of these we'll touch on what we were talking about before.
Okay, well, Julie is in here too.
Great, yeah. That's great, because this is touching on something we were talking about before. Tai Chen asks, says, on your Facebook page, he was told the masters you received from Toei weren't on DVD format, but Viz was assured they were the best masters currently, despite the obvious flaws. If they want to know if you tried to obtain better masters since other international companies obviously got better masters, or if it would be possible to negotiate with Toei along with other international companies to obtain those masters that they used. I think we sort of discussed this, that Toei doesn't keep like two or three sets of masters. One sucks, one's good, and they gave you the sucky one and the Italians the good one, right? I mean, that's not the case.
No, the originals, and you know, Julie can speak more to this, of course, but they, you know, the originals exist in many locations around the world, you know, in different parts. Like, one place might have one season, one place might have another season. And as we were, you know, getting them in as they were available, you know, Toei arranging it and sending that to us. So when those are requested, of course, you request the best ones available. And then if something is not right, you can try to see if there is a replacement. But I know it's Julie's team that works on all those little bits of that.
Yeah, and I mean, Charlene pretty much summed it up. So basically, we always ask for the best that we can find, you know, always. And if we take a look at something and we're concerned about it, we put in repeat requests. Or if there's something that we want more of, like the clean openings and endings, that kind of thing. So basically, we're constantly really pushing on Toei to provide us with the absolute best that they can find. So that's just, I think that pretty much answers that.
Yeah, and it's of note, the clean openings, I know Julie kind of hates me for this, and I really insist on having the clean openings and endings. I'm always, I think I was at your desk like every morning as you came in, like,
no,
are they here
it.
Yet?
I love it. I don't hate it.
So getting those cleans has always been a challenge. All of these. So we're gonna keep fighting to get them.
Yeah.
And I think I'm also a little annoying because I'm a little bit of a Sailor Moon super fan. And I go like, well, this opening changes and this ending changes and this is what goes here and here. Where is it? And in some cases, not all those pieces are even available or they even exist. But it's keep on trying to find all the little bits of it. Every single bit of animation that is available, I'm going to try to grab it.
In the best possible state, yeah. Charlene is, I wouldn't say, super fan is putting it lightly. I would not call you a super fan. I don't know what the word would be, but very passionate and great to have on the team.
So whatever condition that clean opening was when you got it, where you're like, I wish we had the entire show like this?
Well, you guys, your team looked at it. Right.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when we get material and it isn't all exactly the same and some of it is nicer than others, yeah, we have that, you know, craving. It feels like a physical craving. Where is it? Get it in. So, yeah, we're subject to that just like anybody.
Right, yeah. And the opening, I mean, there must have been a dramatic varying quality from episode to episode because in some episodes on this Blu-ray set, during the opening sequence when there's silhouettes on the moon, the ghosting is so bright that it's like a strobe light, the ghosting. It's like a hard outline of a bright white, grainy, smeary ghost that appears on the moon when they're moving around. It's very distracting, but in some episodes it's kind of not there, and in some episodes it's so bright as to be distracting. So obviously you must be working with dramatically different materials, like from episode to episode even.
Sometimes that's the case, I will tell you. And so I guess just kind of going back to our earlier conversation, this kind of proves my point that it's not something that we introduced in the post-processing, because you can imagine we're not doing some things to some episodes and not doing other things to other episodes. Like, that wouldn't really be very logical. So that's, in a sense, it kind of proves my point that I was trying to make earlier. And we definitely do, you know, we are getting very material in, and I'm sorry, Charlene was just going to jump in.
Oh, I was going to say, so a really cool thing in the first season, this is me, you know, being super nerdy about this. In the first season of Sailor Moon, Moonlight Densetsu, Moonlight Legend, the opening changes animation
right. Every
few episodes as they introduce new characters and new story elements.
Mm-hmm.
So that clean opening that's on there is the only clean opening of Moonlight Densetsu that was available. There wasn't a clean of every single iteration of it.
Right.
And that's something that is a cool thing that Sailor Moon continues throughout the seasons as they change the opening. Not so much on the ending, but the opening always evolves as the story evolves.
Right.
Just to reiterate, the reason that I keep coming back to this is because when you say, well, it can't be something that happened in the post-processing, the reason people are very – and I'm very skeptical about that is because – other releases exist made from these masters that do not have these problems. And the difference between your release and theirs,
yeah.
The difference between your release and Kaze's and your release and Dinitz and your release and the Japanese DVDs is that you put it through this post-processing, this authoring process. They did not use that particular authoring process. So to the casual observer, the obvious answer is that is where the problem happened, is in that authoring process. You're
right.
Saying that's not the case. I can understand that, I guess, but I'm not sure then where the problem came in.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I understand that would be a conclusion that fans would get to. I think that we don't know what those processes were that masters were that were supplied to those other firms, even Kaze. I mean, one assumes that there's a level of knowledge or closeness between companies and there actually isn't. So, I, you know, if anything, I can just say I hear where you're coming from. I get it. I've read all the posts. I understand where people are coming from. And there just comes a point beyond which I can't comment on what other sources or masters people had access to. I know what we had access to, and I know what we did to it. And I know why we made the choices we made. And I have to stand behind it because I do stand behind it. So I think that's probably where it sort of ends up for me. You know, I take these things very personally as well. I spend all my waking hours here as passionate as anybody else. So I don't get to be out in front of the microphone as often as Charlene does. But given the chance, I want to sing our praises as much as she does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so, you know, in light of all of this and having seen those other DVD releases, have you considered getting in touch with Kaze or Dinit and saying, hey, what process did you use to get this video looking like this without any of these problems?
Well, I mean, we got, as Julie knows, we get everything through Toei. We don't get them through other partners that they deal with. Everything has to come directly from the licensor.
Well, yeah, but Toei didn't tell you to use Subatomic, and they're not dictating to you the authoring studio that you're using. So maybe you could see what those companies did with these masters to get it looking so good on their end without these problems.
I appreciate the suggestion, and I think, you know, we work with other places besides Subatomic, and we also work with various other post-production houses in Los Angeles and overseas for other kinds of post-processing. So, you know, we're always, I can't really just speak to, in particular, we've got some projects in the work that we're looking at some new processes on, but I can just assure you that, yes, we have a pretty broad range of input, and we're absolutely looking at some new technologies right now.
Okay.
And, you know, I want to just also say, you know, Toei is happy with the release. I realize that there's these comments notwithstanding, but they were recently up here. We had a very long meeting with them, and, you know, I just think it's important to let you know that they, as a licensor, are very pleased. So I'm just going to put that out there. waving the toy flag.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So Schmullis 1 asks, and I know there was, I believe there was a news item about this today or yesterday, to break from the many probable Sailor Moon questions, how about an update on a release date for Tiger and Bunny the Rising on Blu-ray?
Yes, I can actually give you a little bit more of a hint on that. So very recently, the dub for Tiger and Bunny, The Rising, wrapped up. I haven't heard it yet. I'm excited to hear it. But look for that around February. Yeah, Tiger and Bunny, The Rising will be coming out on DVD and Blu-ray right around February.
All right. And now back to Sailor Moon.
It sounds great.
It sounds fabulous. It's absolutely astounding. I just heard the mix.
I have to go bug production to find out who is Golden Ryan. Don't say. I want to find out. But yeah, it'll be coming soon. And that movie is so good. I remember watching Tiger Bunny the Rising in the theater, and I got the same feels that I got when I watched Avengers the first time. Like, I really love that evolution of the heroes. I love Fire Emblem. He is my favorite, so anyone who adores Fire Emblem is just going to be blown away by this movie. I think they tackle a lot of really good stuff with the backstories of those characters. And I also like the B-Team heroes, too. I think they have some really interesting powers, like almost something out of Dr. Horrible. Like, very, very weird powers of the B-Team heroes.
Okay. Back to Sailor Moon. Net Brian T. asks, have you looked into releasing or streaming the musicals or the live-action series?
Well, every single part of Sailor Moon is handled differently. So the musicals have different rights to them. The live-action, the tokusatsu series have different rights to them. And right now, they're not available. Personally, as a fan, I'm sure a lot of people know, the one part of Sailor Moon I love the most personally from the bottom of my heart are the musicals. I'm a big Sailor Moon fan. I went to Japan twice to go see the musicals live. I would love nothing more than for the musicals to be possible. But at the same time, we have to judge the performance of Sailor Moon, the anime, before we can consider pursuing any other portions of the franchise. But it will be, it's not that they live under one big umbrella and you can just go get the other parts. They're all very separate. So we have to make that business decision based on the performance. But man, as a fan, that would be a really beautiful dream. That would be really cool. So fingers crossed.
That would be really strange, I think, to eventually see those tapings of live performances of Sailor Moon stuff actually released here. I think that would be a little surreal.
It would be like watching performances of opera, really. I mean, I don't know how many people are into watching musicals on DVD or Blu-ray. I love it. I really love musicals on Blu-ray because I'm a costume nerd. And if you see Broadway stuff on Blu-ray, you can see the sequins on top of rhinestones and you can see the stitches and you can really look at all that construction and the wig work. So that kind of scratches my nerdy itch.
Well,
they even exist.
Sarah Miu ain't exactly a Phantom of the Opera. I mean, those are some budget productions. I've seen them.
Yeah, but there's charm in those costumes. They're actually very well constructed, having got to see some of them up front.
Right.
There's a lot of beadwork and stuff that doesn't, you know, isn't readily apparent from the back of the house.
Right.
But yeah, it is cheesy, it's schmaltzy, it's over the top, it's meant for kids.
Right.
But it's a lot of fun, and I think entertainment should be fun. So I nerd out over it. Like, I like the big, overdone Sailor Fuku, but everyone knows I'm kind of tacky, so that's what it is.
Okay. Composed Rose asks, why does this... I mean, okay, so the obvious answer is it's a 46 episode season cut in half. But she wants to know why the first release cuts off at episode 23 instead of episode 24, where the Nephrite arc actually ends.
It's in half. It's perfectly in half because, well, that season has even numbers.
Right.
And if we were to force another episode onto those discs, there would not be room for any extras, and it would be lopsided. Especially, you know, even on the Blu-ray and definitely on the DVD. It would just be, it would really affect the disc count and what was on the disc. So when we, you know, made the initial proposal to Toei and doing the full release plan of how we're going to put out Sailor Moon, it was half season sets. First season just happened to be 23 and 23. But as we have odd numbered seasons coming up, we will do the split where it's the most logical. It's just, yeah, it's a cliffhanger, but there was really no way to avoid it and still get everything on there that we wanted to get.
Digicho asks, how involved was Naoko Takeuchi with this whole release?
Everything for the release that goes, you know, goes into the physical package, the casting, everything goes through the whole team in Japan. So from what I worked on, you know, Sensei was involved, especially in the packaging design and, you know, giving feedback. And as we work through it to come up with a look that will carry through all five seasons, because it was very important to have the seasons be independent, because not only are they seasons, they're kind of, they function as series as well, but also look good when all five of them are together and eventually the movies. So working on that initial design schema, there was a lot of back and forth on it. And then as everyone becomes more comfortable with stuff, then the approvals go a little faster. But as far as involvement, you know, very involved in the voices. All of the promo items have to go up through Sensei too, which is very unique. So all those little, like those little Sailor Moon coins, all those postcards, everything for the voice actors, all of that stuff, it just makes the process like really long, but we're very fortunate that so many people in Japan want to be so involved on Sailor Moon. I like it that they're super hands-on.
X-Leader 75 wants to know if you ever plan on releasing the Acel World OVA episodes.
Those were originally with the video games, right?
Yeah.
Those belong to the video games, so there's no way to put them out on Blu-ray at this time. They go with those video game releases, so it's kind of to be determined maybe in the future. Of course, we would love to have them, but there's just no news on it right now.
All right. I got a whole lot of questions from relatively upset Canucks that Neon Alley is not available in Canada. And since you went to Hulu, they really can't watch any of your stuff. And they want to know if you have any intention on doing what some of your colleagues and competitors in the industry have done and produce a streaming solution for Canadians who want to watch your programming.
We're definitely interested in working with a streaming partner that can handle Canada and can also handle things to the needs of the licensors. So while there are some options for streaming partners in Canada, they just don't really work with our business. As far as building a player just for Canada, not at this time. We're really looking for someone to partner with that's really willing to get behind the anime space and serve that consistently. And Hulu is a great partner with us, and they give us a lot of the data we need and a lot of data the licensors need, and they help us. You know, they really work hand-in-hand with us on the promotion. We just need to find something similar for up north. Okay. Unfortunately, there's just no solution right now, and Hulu is not in Canada, so hands are kind of tied.
All right. Okay. Got a question here from Sago DN asks, I guess people have noticed that the insert songs in the dubs are muted. in this release, and they want to know if that will continue in future Sailor Moon releases.
Yeah, hi, this is Julie. I actually had a question about that, because we had an issue with early Hulu releases where the songs are muted, but that's not the case actually on the product, and so I was a little bit, I'm a little bit curious where they're seeing that. I know this isn't an interactive thing, but that should actually not be the case. We did have an issue early on with our very first, a couple first Hulu shows went up in that way, and then we corrected it really pretty much immediately. Okay. So I'm a little bit, I'm not sure where they're seeing that, or rather not hearing it.
It sounds like maybe they're working from old information.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Understandable. All right. Okay. Actually, that wraps us up. Thank you guys for taking those questions. I know it wasn't easy.
It's fine. Hey, you know, I love talking with you, Zach, and I love that you ask all kinds of questions. I mean, it's totally fine.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be included, and I'm sorry I didn't. You know, I don't always have the happy soundbite you're looking for, but, you know, I'm just really very, very grateful to be on the call, and I have to say I'd be happy to make myself available at any time, because it's exciting for me. You know, we're usually behind the scenes, we're sort of behind the curtain in the backstage pulling the levers, and it really makes me happy to have a chance to speak to some of the issues and get closer to fan response, so the more the better from my point of view, so thank you for including me.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Charlene and Julie for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating and review. We'd appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.